Gonna pay the bills, Sean? We're paying the bills? Hey, huh? Anything? Anything? Stop the music again, please. Tom,
right,
ever
what?
Since you came, stop the music. Tom, do you see a direct correlation here? Sponsors on Friday. No one listening. Tom comes back Monday, yes.
Why don't we do Bucky's here? Because now you've been ousted from the bottom of the hour because Rachel has a really important sponsor by Muckleshoot Casino.
Okay, now I feel better. Now I feel better.
So do some Bucky's at the top, John.
Get that Bucky spot ready to go, please. Just get that, please, ready to go. All right, yeah, Tom is back, everybody. So you got that. Felix did a pretty good job. Music, please, because this sounds horrible. Now we're doing radio. All right, you write to us at mynorthwest.com. You can text as well at 98973. And, hey, how about Bucky's, huh? They got 16 locations. I can't do it.
Feels weird at the top.
It does feel weird at the top. I just can't do it. They got 50 locations. They've been around for I don't know how many years. Bucky's Auto Service Centers. All right, guys. I'm all thrown off there on a Monday. All righty. Animals all around. And here we go. So there was a speech on... The president gave a speech in front of Mount Rushmore. He did this on the 3rd of July. A bunch of people tried to protest. They put some vans out front. The vans, I think, were taken right to Bucky's Auto Service Centers over there. They got them repaired. They picked them up and moved them. Then everybody went in. Some people had masks on. Others didn't. You had three groups of people. You had the people who just wanted to see the president. You had the people who were Trump supporters. Then you had some protesters that were there as well. And the president spoke, and he read from a teleprompter. I tell you, I don't know who wrote this one. This is better than most of the ones that he reads.
You think so?
Yeah, I liked it.
You like the dark apocalyptic type.
Well, that's from the reporters from the Washington Post and the New York Times. But that's the reporters. That's not the op-ed. Those guys talking about how he was glorifying Confederacy, but he never actually mentioned the Confederacy. It seemed to me the basic speech was, I watched it, was American is exceptional. America is a great country. Yes, we had some problems, but look how far we've come. Look at all the great people that have helped us. We're an exceptional country. We're better than everyone. He didn't talk about himself, which is nice. And he basically said, look at this, everybody. We're great. Let's celebrate how great we are. And then the New York Times, the Washington Post, all the other mainstream liberal media that were not writing op-eds, but actual reporters talking about how incredibly dark it was, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just took it apart. And even Tammy Duckworth described it as, supporting white supremacy. So what specifically do you point to in the speech, Tom, that shows him glorifying the Confederacy?
Well, I mean, the thing is that unlike you, I didn't watch the whole speech, but I did see the clips they played in all the Sunday shows. And the way he was talking about how we dealt with the Nazis and the Marxists and the anarchists and the agitators and the looters and all of this, he seemed to be, kind of like portraying this culture war argument, which is the general thrust of most of the Sunday shows, were that he's decided that he is going to win or lose this election based on the culture wars. The culture wars are where his base is, and he needs to keep the base inflamed. And so he used this kind of a dark apocalyptic stuff, and didn't mention George Floyd or anything, like that in this. It was all these, how their forces are trying to tear apart America, which is a lot like his inaugural speech. Now, I thought his inaugural speech was pretty dark. I don't know if you agreed with it, that it would, his inaugural speech was dark, but he used the phrase American carnage.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, that's how this is kind of being compared to the launch. Usually candidates, especially in the second term, there's, it's morning in America. It's sun and roses and unicorns and all of this. And instead, he portrays as if we're in the midst of a battle for the soul of America, like Joe Biden uses.
Yeah.
But he has different enemies that he is fighting. So from that point of view, I think the thrust seems proper.
Yeah, I don't know if it's dark here. These are not from the editorials. This is actual writers.
Yes.
Covering reporters. At Mount Rushmore, Trump uses 4th of July celebration to stoke culture war. Trump uses Mount Rushmore's speech to deliver a divisive culture war message. That's from the New York Times. Trump pushes racial division and flouts virus rules at Mount Rushmore. That's from the Associated Press. There is a war. I don't like the term war, but there is strife going on now in the country. You have a group of people that are tearing down monuments. You have a group of people that would like to defund police. You have a group of people that are pushing the Marxist point of view, and they're pushing and pulling the party further and further and further to the left. And that's one group. There's always some sort of struggle for culture because politics and culture go hand in hand. And in this case, the president is pointing out that there are people that would like to tear down the Washington Monument. And there are people that are tearing down Jefferson. There are people that like to destroy the past to say that this country was born illegitimately in 1619 and it has not improved and it's just as bad and just horrible and it's just a horrible place. I mean, talk about a dark apocalyptic view of America. Read 1619. I read that. I'm like, wow, what country is this woman living in? So then you say, well, those people are dark and apocalyptic. These are the people that are talking about how horrible America is. And Donald Trump comes along. If he gave this speech at any other time, it would just be another 4th of July or 3rd of July speech. Oh, yeah.
4th of July, usually we're, it's a rally, you know, around the flag boys type. And it's how we're bringing people together instead of isolating his enemies as somehow not just enemies of Trump, but enemies of America. We've had hundreds of thousands of people marching in the streets in for Black Lives Matter. No reference to that. No reference to the fact that most of the American populace, we're talking like 65% of people say they support Black Lives Matter and all of that. There's more unanimity in this country. He has focused on the minority, perhaps, if you believe those polls.
Yeah.
You know, and saying, listen, this is, we are really being, you know, driven, you know, to the brink, and our we're not going to recognize America anymore if we let these, you know, left-wing fascists.
Right.
Use
the word fascist. That's overused in politics, but he does bring up the cancel culture that is happening. If you had any one of those writers for the New York Times, the Post, or any of the other ones actually try to say something that would at least be slightly critical of Black Lives Matter, they would probably be looking for a new job or they would be forced to leave. So the cancer culture, the cancer culture is alive and well. He points that out. And I guess the thing is, if you believe American is exceptionalism, if you believe America is the greatest country in the world, a lot of liberals are like, oh, really? Oh, why don't you do a little bit more jingoistic? Why don't you just try to, you know, putting down other countries and stuff? And this guy is, and he's feeding the red meat to his base. I got that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's not as, I thought the State of the Union, or not State of the Union, I thought his inauguration was dark. I mean, he was pointing to the blood in the streets and the rest of the stuff going on, and I'm going to come in here and be a law and order president. So that was a darker one. This, to me, didn't bother me. I just hate the way he reads. I'm sitting there thinking, my God, if I had written that, he's killing it. He's putting the wrong words, emphasis on the wrong words. And he did a couple of those so true's, Tom, by the way.
Yes. He leans to the left and kind of, you know, reads his teleprompter. Then he shifts and he leans to the right.
Yep.
But, you know, maybe you're being won over by his speechwriters because that was none other than the work of Stephen Miller.
Yeah, I know.
Here's
some of Miller's work.
We got hit by the virus that came from China. And we've made a lot of progress. Our strategy is moving along well. It goes out in one area and rears back its ugly face in another area. But we've learned a lot. We've learned how to put out the flame. Likewise, testing. There were no tests for a new virus, but now we have tested almost 40.
I think this was the first draft. Doesn't it seem a little rough?
You're right.
40 million
He's
people.
He's lost the rhythm.
By so doing, we show cases, 99% of which are totally harmless.
Oh, Jacob, could you pick a worse cut? You're as bad as the Washington Post.
They are walking that. Even Mark Meadows had to walk that one back.
All right, moving on. The sad thing is these were not editorials. That's the saddest thing. If you read, I don't mind an editorial. Go ahead, you comment on the thing. But when you just sort of say that you're alluding to the fact of Confederacy or going after the counterculture or whatever, it's no. Why don't you just report what was done? But
there is some analysis in there. You're right.
That's why they have to cover it that way because he's such a horrible human being. We need to stop him.
Well, let's look at the next story. It gets even better.
I know,
Trump.
Paula Reid. Talking to your White House press secretary about Trump and Bubba Watson.
Why is it Bubba Wallace's responsibility to apologize for an investigation into a noose that he didn't report and he never even saw? It was NASCAR that found this, that reported this, and even the FBI referred to it as a noose, even if they said it wasn't a specific crime against Mr. Wallace. Why is the president even suggesting that Mr. Wallace should apologize?
Well, look, the FBI, as I noted, concluded that this was not a hate crime, and he believes it'd go a long way if Bubba came out and acknowledged that as well.
I like how Kaylee is so good at looking, not breaking eye contact, and flipping through that giant book that has everything. Yeah. That book, how big is that book? Because it seems
I think
it
weighs more than she does.
It seems to have everything on it, right? The president's comment on mitosis and meiosis and cell division. She's like, yeah. Well, when the president speaks about cell division, she's like flipping. Mitosis, yeah. As you know. And you're like, oh, okay. I guess the president said Bubba should apologize. Is that what it is?
Yes. Okay, but this is another example of dumb. He doesn't really know what he's talking about. He has these instincts and he figures, oh, yeah, I'm going to call this a hoax. Well, how could it have been a hoax? It must have been like Jesse Smollett, who McEnany actually referenced. You know, claiming it. And he says, no, but he didn't make the claim. It was NASCAR that said it was. He never even saw the noose.
Yeah.
He just doesn't have control of his facts. But, he knows his opinions without the facts.
Bubba didn't see the noose, but then later on heard about it and was really upset about it, then went on Don Lemon and said, you know, Don Lemon says, well, it wasn't meant for you, but it's clear what it means. And then Bubba goes on to talk about, you know, he's not going to be, forced out, and it's terrible, and NASCAR needs to mend, and how horrible the country is, right, as a result of this, and people are depressed, and right?
Okay, but remember, it's the NASCAR president who's the maddest about it being dismissed as not a noose. It is a noose. NASCAR is the one that's trying to make this sea change, and when the president, who is supposedly a NASCAR confrere, ends up getting in the way of their message, they're not happy with it either.
Yeah.
So
it's like crazy land. What's Trump's original opinion of the Confederate flag?
The president said that NASCAR saw bad ratings because they took down the Confederate flag, banned the Confederate flag. Does he believe NASCAR should fly the Confederate flag?
Oh, my God. Imagine getting this job. How long? Oh, my Lord.
Why don't they fly it here?
The whole point of the tweet.
Why don't they fly it here?
It was to note the incident, the alleged hate crime, that it, in fact, was not a hate crime. At the very end, the ban on the flag was mentioned in the broader context of the fact that he rejects this notion that somehow NASCAR men and women who go to these sporting events are racist, when, in fact, as it turns out, what we saw with the FBI report and the alleged incident of a hate crime, it was a complete indictment of the media's rush to judgment, once again calling this a hate crime when the FBI completely dismissed that.
Well, good job skipping her on that one.
I know. She's so actually pretty good at what she's doing.
And she has beautiful
But it's
dresses.
NASCAR was the one that said that it was a hate crime. Let's get that. And by the way, again, typical with our president, and that's why the ratings are as low as they've ever been. No, they're up.
NASCAR's
the ratings
up?
Are up. Yeah, wait, NASCAR's how? Ratings are up.
That's because no one's there to watch it.
Maybe so, but still, he knows he wants to make a point. He figured, well, they must be down, and he doesn't even bother checking. They actually are up by about 8%. But I agree. The question is, are they watching because they don't have the option to attending these kinds of things? It's one of the few sporting events on the mm-hmm. TV. Maybe so.
You ever been to one of those?
No, I went to.
It's tiring.
It's because they go round and round and round.
Yes, and it's loud and it's hot and the beer is expensive. And we went because Dennis Bounds, who was the anchor on King 5, loves NASCAR and wanted to be in the pits.
He does?
Yeah, he wanted to be in the pits and actually get on the crew to change a tire. So we went with him to one of the races. And that was a long day.
Yeah.
Long.
Well, it's a
hot, loud day. I was like, maybe a car will hit another car and a bumper will fly off and hit me in the head and I can go home. That's what I was hoping for. Flying debris. Besides, the other crazy thing is those cars are going super fast. A wheel flies off, goes up in, like, just flies up into the thing. There's no net. It's like, you get hit by a foul ball on the shoulder. Sure.
Yeah.
But a burning hot piece of metal flies into the crowd and people are like, whoa, look out.
Yeah. I mean, a few times that happens, it can be deadly.
Something else. All right. So they want to get more money from the rich. Now they're calling it the boss tax. This is the Seattle Times. This is Danny Westnead pointing out that Seattle's going to finally find some way to get money from the rich people because the way our system is set up, we have no income tax. We have high sales tax. But don't forget, the rich people pay a tremendous amount of money to the federal government that the rest of us don't pay anything to.
So, well, he doesn't mention that part.
No, he doesn't need to. He just goes on the fact that, oh, we're even going to get those Seahawks that have extravagant salaries or whatever the word was that he used to describe the people's incomes. But it's a new way to get the money that might not end up in court and might not get squashed like some of his other plans.
The significance of this, he thinks that Teresa Mosqueda, who has been rumored to eyeing the mayoral seat that Jenny Durkin now has. Mm-hmm. He says that she's come up with a wealth tax that might hold water. Mm-hmm. And that is the problem with the head tax in the past and the current suggestions by a couple of other council members, led by Shama Sawan, of course, is that it looks like it's a tax on jobs.
Yeah.
And that doesn't sell well. He says, in this particular case, she's avoided. That was the fatal flaw in each of these earlier renditions. Mm-hmm. This one is not bad because it doesn't go after every job, which is what the others had. It only goes after people that make $150,000 or more, and that's a 0.7.
Yeah.
If you make $400,000, it's, I think, a 1.7. And if you keep it that, you're just hitting a tax for the people that are making the wealthiest in this city or in this state. I guess it's a city ordinance. Then that's more palatable. And they said Amazon could raise a stink like they did last time, but they have doubled in their value during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So even they might realize that it's better for the city if they did pitch in a little bit of this.
Would city employees get taxed, Tom, with the number of people that are making $400,000 a year, like police officers?
That's a good question. I don't know. I haven't seen the actual bill, so I don't know if it's private companies and the government isn't a hit. I know government's going to take a hit. They're going to have to let go a lot of people because they don't have any money in the coffers.
Right.
But
I saw this piece that's in Forbes talking about the number of people that work in the city that make like crazy money. Police officers making $400,000 a year. 601 city employees that earn more than the mayor. People that work for Seattle Light. There's a cable splitter who makes $307,000 a year, more than the CEO. And the amount of money that is being paid, there's firefighters that are making $300,000 a year. Crazy.
Really?
Yeah. I'll send it to you. Look at it.
And
once you print all those out, and then you'd go, okay, so we're going to tax the people at Amazon, or do we maybe want to start with the fact that we have people that are making $400,000 a year that are police officers?
That's right. Stunning.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not...
It's not what?
There must be an explanation.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
what
your
average pay.
That's the city. Yep. All right, back. All righty. This is Tom and Curly Show. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. I thought of you over the weekend. Think of you often, Tom. But I thought of you when I went up to my cabin. That's right. Went to my cabin. And immediately I wanted to do some rearranging, you know, because I'm artsy like that. And Rob, who sold me the cabin, is more of a kind of a big, chop wood and fix cars kind of guy. And immediately I'm like, you think wildflowers would grow over there in that field? And then I didn't like the way there were these big hunks of wood just laying around waiting to be burned. So I went to pick one up to rearrange, and there's a bee's nest underneath it. And I got stung, and Rob, the guy who just sold me the cabin, gets stung in the eye.
Oh, my God.
I try apologizing for that. You know, why are you moving the log? I don't know the way it looks over here. Just don't like that. Put some ice on that eye of yours. All right, 239.
This is going to sound like a Green Acres episode. That's what you buying a cabin is going to be like. City folk out in the rough and tumble.
Oh, I got big plans.
You do.
All right. 239 experts. With one big claim, the coronavirus is airborne. This is interesting because if you go back to March, World Health Organization said the droplets are big, and the droplets that have the virus that could infect you don't go airborne because they're too thick.
Ugh.
And they heavy, and they thick and heavy, and they fall. They come out of your mouth, and they hit the ground, so they're not floating all over the place. And they had stuck with that, and they're still sticking with that, even though a study had come out, and it's a picture of a guy sitting in a restaurant or something in China, and it shows how he has it or she has it, and then because of the circulation inside the restaurant, that, like, I don't know how many other people in there end up getting that as a side dish. They got the noodles, plus they got the virus. So the problem is that World Health Organization still continues to stick with the thing that they're not teeny tiny little particles that could float around for a while. They come out and hit the ground.
Yeah, so unless you were literally like sneezed on, so something could come out from somebody's nose and land on you, or a cough, right, you know, onto you.
Up your nose, up your nose.
Yeah, the chances are that it wouldn't necessarily dissipate. It would, fall to the ground, and then you might, you know, walk on it. If you were barefoot and you ended up, touching your feet, I suppose there are ways that you can get it. But the assumption from WHO is that, no, it's not really that at all. Well, now we've got, so next week, a bunch of scientists from around the world, because everybody, you know, who's anybody is now working on this virus. We have 239 experts that are coming out and say, listen, this is airborne. They have plenty of individual instances where they can establish that that's the case. And WHO, what this really is a battle among doctors, institutional doctors, and then doctors sort of in the field.
Mm-hmm.
The institutional doctors, which is what WHO is, they have this very strict, conservative, kind of rigid approval system.
Mm-hmm.
And what they claim is, we do not have any incontrovertible evidence. We have some suspicions. We have occasional this and that, but they have such a high standard, a high bar to prove, to establish this is indeed the case, because they're now going to send it out to every country in the world.
Right.
They don't have that kind of local control. They are kind of slow and conservative. And in this particular case, that may be good in the long run, but in a short-term crisis like this is, well, this is happening all over the world, they need to act more quickly to good possibilities.
But the problem is that the World Health Organization is just not just a bunch of scientists, because they are funded and they have so many other connections, sort of tentacles into political. They can't.
Yeah, because they're funding. Yeah.
Right. So when they come out and they were not exactly forthcoming with what was happening in China, and people said, well, look at this, China's pulling the strings of the World Health Organization, so we're not getting the straight poop on what we need to know, people began to question the World Health Organization. So they're just not just scientists that are constricted. They're also the politics that's involved in the thing. So they have to be more careful about how they, you know, proceed with information that could be, you know, earth moving or earth shaking, because now we know that the stuff is thinner and lighter. It could stick around longer.
Yes. So it isn't political, like, oh, well, we want to protect China's hindquarters, and so we will not talk about this as a big deal. This is more of a scientific dispute. And I think this is where the WHO acknowledges we do have to take into account politics, but it's more like a sociopolitics. And that is, for instance, this line here: if the WHO were to push for rigorous control measures in the absence of proof, hospitals in low and middle income countries may be forced to divert scarce resources from other crucial programs. That's the balance that the WHO has to figure out. Right now, the United States, probably most of Europe, certainly Scandinavian countries, they could afford to, on a hunch, decide run with this or run with that. But a lot of the poor countries don't have that. And so they feel nervous recommending to a poor country, pour a bunch of, what little funds you have into this when we don't have incontrovertible proof.
Right.
And the problem with that is that they say there's no evidence for something, but there isn't any not in evidence either.
Right.
It's like it could go either way. And people misinterpret that to say, well, there's no reason. They say it's better to be safe than sorry kind of approach. It's just it's a typical kind of thing. Institutions have their own kind of sense of or sorts of gravity, and it gets in the way of quick, on the scene kind of responses.
Anything big like that, right? It doesn't move. It's not flexible. It doesn't move quickly with new research. Cheapest way to be able to control the virus is to know who is sick. And the fastest and easiest way is this little strip. You spit into a little cup. There is a substance in there with your spit. Then you stick your little protein paper in there. And then within 15 minutes? 15 minutes.
Yeah, 15.
If the paper turns a certain color, it tells you that you have the virus in your system. So then, therefore, don't go to work. Quarantine yourself for 14 days, even if you're asymptomatic. Just pull yourself out of the roster. Take yourself out of the game. Sit out for a while. You're one last person to infect somebody else. The strips are cheap enough that the government could end up buying them $1 or $5 a day, whatever it take. Everybody in the morning would be part of your routine when you're flossing or something else. You would then spit in the thing, put the thing in, and then go ahead. That's if people did what they're supposed to do. Most people won't. But then
you don't think so.
No,
okay.
Because then, as I always say, is it inspect or expect? Well, it's not. You expect them to do it, so you won't. People won't. So then if you want to go to a restaurant, they're going to say, oh, okay, can you please send me whatever it is of your strip or whatever, right? You're going to need proof of it. So now there's going to be an app because then people are like, oh, that's not really, I borrowed my buddy's strip. So then there's going to be some sort of way of being able to show that you are okay with this. That's where people think it'll eventually go.
Okay, yeah. To me, this is like the best news we've had in months about detection, these little paper strip tests. And I really, what's good about this is they say if they're cheap enough, they're really a dollar a day. Mm-hmm. You could do this every single day. And they say that one of the arguments against this is that they are not the best means of detecting and containing the virus. But the problem is they say that's more important to be able to find out quickly whether you have this or not than wait for the perfect test that'll be, you know, like 99% accurate. If you do a bunch of maybe less accurate tests, but you do it over every day, a long period of time, you'll be able to more quickly corral things. And if now the test would cost $100, you're not going to do that every day. If it's $1, you might do it every day.
Yeah.
And I think I disagree just a little with you, John. I think I would know a lot of people that if it was $1 a day and I could just take a test before I go into work or, you know, see my parents or something like that, that people probably would be more apt to do that than not, rather than like lie to get into a restaurant.
I agree. If you're afraid that what you do or don't do could kill someone that you know, you will not.
Okay.
You will not. You will take the test. But if you're going about your day every single day, you're living your life, you don't feel it, you don't have it, you're not going to do it. I just don't think you'll do it unless someone forces you to do it. The reason people don't drive into the oncoming lane of traffic is because they get killed as well. All right, Tom. Well, here it is. This is Mr. Kanye West.
I have decided in 2020 to run for president.
That, my friend, was 2019.
Uh-huh. Kanye West is actually making good on that promise from 2015.
It's kind of fun. We're actually running an E.T. story. Entertainment Tonight.
The world would be a better place.
On Saturday, the rapper dropped the news on Twitter, writing, "We must now realize the promise of America by trusting God, unifying our vision, and building our future. I am running for president of the United States. #2020vision.
Ever since Trump won, it proved that I could be president."
That's true of just about everybody.
Kanye already has some votes from his famous friends. Elon Musk. Was one of the first to weigh in, tweeted, "You have my full support."
Which, you know, Elon Musk loves the attention as much as anybody else. So he must have just jumped in.
As much as Kanye,
as much as Donald Trump. So Why shouldn't Elon Musk jump in there and say, I'll support you as well? And then who's that horrible guy that was voted the worst person in the world because he came up with that? He bought the drug and then charged
Strelick or something.
Yeah, Martin Strelick. Strelick, whatever, yeah. He also said he's all behind Kanye West and he'll help any way he can.
I hope he becomes his campaign manager.
Yes.
Well, I'm almost embarrassed by the fact that we're doing this, but it is kind of a pop culture news because it's not serious. He's not serious. He already sort of indicated that he's comfortable with Trump as president, wouldn't mind seeing him getting a second term. And I think if he was a serious candidate, all he'd have to do is play that 5-minute sort of rambling lecture he gave to the president while he was sitting in the Oval Office as proof that this guy is not exactly presidential material, despite the fact that Donald Trump also proves to be the case.
You heard Joe Biden recently, but here comes Wash Us in the Blood.
Chow down on us. Wash us in the blood. Wash us in the blood. Whole life being thugs. No choice selling drugs. South side what it does. Rain down on us.
This is not some of his new gospel music. By the way, that is getting critically acclaimed, Tom. His gospel stuff.
Is that right?
People
well, he does have it. He has a new album out, I think, or a new release. Is it the gospel?
Oh, this
album?
Must be the new stuff.
This is one of the new songs.
Here's the later version, yeah.
They don't want me to Kanye. They don't want Kanye to be Kanye. They want to sign a fake Kanye. They trying to sign a Kanye. That's right, I call him Kanye. But don't take me the wrong way. But don't take me the wrong way. Because God took me a long way. They want to edit the interviews. They want to take it to interludes. Cut a whole sentence to interludes. You know that it's fake if it's in the news. So I let it fly when I'm in the booth. The devil, the lion, I've been the truth.
nobody living and nobody getting it, doing a different way.
Yeah, he's the only guy I know who speaks of himself in the third person, but then also breaks himself into two categories, old Kanye, new Kanye. And do you like the old Kanye or the new Kanye?
And now it's Kanye. That's the, if you heard, yeah, you listen closely, that's what he's saying in the new one. He does, I mean, it is still pretty religious. There's, yeah. The rest of the first clip, he gets into the Holy, asking the Holy Spirit to come down on us, something like that.
All of us or just him?
I don't know if it's a royal we or not.
Okay, fine.
Well, is he going after the, so the suggestion here in the political article is, well, maybe this, if he was serious about this, which I don't think he is, if he's going to follow through on this, that this could be a way to attract African-Americans away from the Joe Biden vote and maybe inadvertently help Trump. But if he's going after the religious vote, maybe he could hurt the evangelical support for Donald Trump. He could hurt both candidates.
Oh, come on.
Not. I don't think he won't get
it's
seven
us
votes.
Talking about him, and we just played a song called Wash Us in the Blood from his new album. So he wins. Kanye won on this one.
Yeah.
You like why don't you get on the record? Because you never have, Tom. You like the old Kanye or the new Kanye? Where are you on this?
I'll go with the old Kanye. I like the Kanye who said, George Bush doesn't like black people. He doesn't care about black people. Remember when
hates
he made
black
that?
People.
Was it hates? Okay,
yeah,
during the
he got on
Katrina.
That was during the telethon. Yeah. And who was he standing next to? A comedian.
Mike Myers.
Mike Myers.
Boy, was that an uncomfortable
He's a Canadian. Oh, my God. But I prefer that political side of Kanye to the I love Trump side of Kanye.
So you like She Ain't Nothing But a Gold Digger?
Oh, way better.
Okay. Well, that's old Kanye.
Yeah, no, I figured. I like old Kanye. That's what I was telling
you. All right,
you.
I'm just trying to shake you, see if you do any difference. All right, fine.
And you, John?
I'm an old Kanye guy, too.
We're both old.
No, don't drag me.
Yeah.
No. A listener took me to task and referred to me as an old white guy. I was like, Tom's not here today.
You just had a birthday. You're catching up to me.
Chris Martin sat in for Jacob. And he let all these nasty things get through. I'm like, whoa, I thought people liked me. Sean, don't people like me? What's going on?
Truth always hurts.